How is the name of the company that sent Twit a letter about the patent, alleged patent infringement, how is that sealable?
I don't think any of this was public record, Your Honor.
But how is it sealable? How is it sealable? Have you read the rule, the local rule as to what's sealable, right? You filed an administrative motion to seal. What was the basis for your administrative motion?
I believe that it's private and confidential information.
No, actually it was that it was attorney-client. That was what you put forth in your administrative motion.
I believe that also is true.
Okay, how is the letter that a third party sent your client attorney-client privilege?
I understand Your Honor's point, Your Honor. I take your point.
Okay.
Yes.
So it's not. So, and also, it's not, you can't seal anything just because it's not a matter of public record. The default is that everything is public. Your client has filed a lawsuit in this court, and the default is that everything is public, and there's a very high standard to make it sealable and not public. So, for example, again, if we look at page 2, the fact that you consulted a particular attorney, that's not attorney-client privileged. That's not attorney-client privileged. Or on page 7, you write, without disclosing attorney-client privilege, because we don't want to disclose it, and then you seal everything there. But here's a more fundamental problem with this entire sealing motion. You have disclosed everything to Twitter. Everything. In your motion,
has everything, Your Honor.
You have disclosed every, no, you have disclosed everything your motion, right, was provided to Twitter. Twitter is the defendant. You've now disclosed it to a third party. So why isn't it waived?
It was disclosed to Twitter's counsel for a motion to disqualify.
The motion is against Twitter. Twitter has chosen a counsel, and you're seeking to deprive Twitter of their counsel of choice. So you disclosed it to Twitter. If you look at the Jensen case, which you cite, Jensen,
yes, Your Honor.
The rule is, and the reason we have sort of the presumption that confidentiality information has been shared based on the substantial relationship, is so that the party moving to disqualify doesn't have to disclose the confidential information, communications. It's to preserve the attorney-client privilege. That's why they have the presumption. Your client decided to waive that privilege by disclosing it all to Twitter. They didn't have to do that, right? Not at all, not required to do that. That's why the law has that presumption. But they did so. It's all been disclosed to Twitter. And so I don't know how any of it is therefore sealable as attorney-client privilege. Some things like the financial information, that is confidential. I get that. So your motion to seal is denied, and by next Wednesday, you can resubmit it, but it's going to have to be very little. If you're going to argue that you haven't waived something, I'm going to need argument in a brief. Because the rule is when you disclose it to a third party, it's waived. You've disclosed it to Twitter. That's why they have that rule. I don't know if anything matters. There's nothing particularly secret in there, I think, or harmful in that sense. So
I understand what you're saying, though, Your Honor.
Okay.
I
do. All right. So by next Wednesday, please resubmit the motion. Okay. So, and that sort of colors a little bit because we're not under seal here today because I don't really think there's anything that needs to be under seal that we're discussing.
I understand. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. So,
ask a quick administrative question.
Yes.
Wednesday by the end of the day for filing that?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, so then we go to the motion to disqualify, and I guess I'm having trouble trying to figure out why there is a substantial relationship between sort of the limited matter in which the firm Dury Tangri represented your client, no litigation, right, never resulted in litigation, that's right, how that is substantially related to this non-patent trademark contract action against Twitter that your client has initiated against Twitter.
Right, Your Honor. I think the cases that we discussed in the pleadings describe the issue. And in fact, the declaration of opposing counsel, Ms. Dury, and exhibits A and B to her declaration go to the heart of the matter. It does not have to be the same factual issues involved in the first case, second case. That seems clear in the case law. There has to be a substantial relationship, and there has to be some sense in the initial client that confidences, which are deemed confidential, we have those confidential communications, are going to be protected.
Say that again. It's not some subjective test. It's not a subjective test. It doesn't matter what's actually in the head of the lawyer or the head of your client, right? That's not a subjective test. In fact, that's what the courts say we don't want to get into at all. We actually don't want to have an inquiry as to what's in their head. That's why we look at the substantial relationship between the previous representation and the current representation.
Not in the attorney's head, correct, Your Honor, but I believe in the client's head, who's the one here, the pivotal person, the pivotal entity in this analysis. This client, Twit, believes that it communicated confidential information that could be used against it in this litigation.
So what? So you could have the exact same scenario, exact same facts, and because one client believes it was confidential information that could be used against it, and another client doesn't, in one case there'd be disqualification, and the other case there wouldn't, just based on what's subjectively in the client's head?
I think the courts look to the integrity of the system and the appearance of propriety. And when I have a client who thinks, I've sent financial data, I've sent streaming information, that's all in the possession now of Twitter's new counsel, then there is a possibility that will be used in future litigation, and the language in the cases says either there is likelihood or there's a probability that this will be used in the subsequent litigation. That matters. That information can be used, could be used, and those are the terms that the cases use, could be used in this litigation.
Well, it certainly that's what animates the rule, and the disqualification rule is for the integrity of the legal profession. I get that. But that's not what your client must show to disqualify defendant's firm. Not what's in her head or what she believes or he believes or what they think. That doesn't matter. What matters is the relationship between the two representations, right?
I think that's true, but the courts look at that issue through the eyes of the client.
What case?
I believe it's Trone, Your Honor. I think it was addressed in County as well as in Ferris, but it is a reasonable probability that confidence were disclosed, which could be used against the client in a later representation. A substantial relationship between the two matters is presumed. That's in Trone v. Smith, cited in our reply brief at page 6. There is then a reasonable probability that this material could be used.
How?
Presumption. If you look at what was disclosed, Your Honor, the fact that Twitter's counsel has now in its office, in its head, in its possession, information about my client's feelings, my client's position regarding litigation.
Regarding litigation in which they were sued.
It's tough to go into all those things that have been previously under seal, Your Honor,
Been disclosed. But anyway, you don't have to go into detail, but I've looked at them. It's as innocuous as you can get. And what about Ferris? What does Ferris say about that?
I think Ferris and Connie both indicate that issues regarding evaluation, prosecution, settlement, or accomplishment of the former litigation is material to the evaluation, prosecution, settlement of the current representation.
What case could Dury Tangri represent a party that's adverse to your client?
Well,
what case?
I suggested that in the briefing, Your Honor. If they had consulted with my client earlier on a domestic abuse issue.
No. Under these circumstances, we have a representation. There's no dispute as to that. They had an attorney-client relationship with your client. No dispute. So we have those facts. So what case going forward, any case, could they ever represent a party adverse to your client?
I don't know that they could.
Okay.
I don't know that they could.
Exactly.
I think your point is well taken.
That is exactly what you are arguing, that they are forever. And what case says that
is correct.
I don't think any case says that. I think the cases say we have to look at it on a case-by-case mechanism, see what was disclosed and what information they have in their possession. And our position is that they have information in their possession that if it had come into our offices, the confidential material, the litigation philosophy, all that feeling that this my company has about litigation, we would have been...
So what case says that?
We would not have taken this case.
That's every case. Every case in which you represent someone, you get that client's general views about their litigation philosophy. So what you're arguing is, essentially, there's no successive representation ever. And, of course, the case law doesn't support that at all.
No, that's not the argument precisely, Your Honor. Of course there are situations where that would be the case. But I think the cases say you have to look at the information that was disclosed. And you have to err on the side of caution here.
Well, actually, the cases actually say normally we don't look at the information that was disclosed. What we do is we look at the relationship between the previous representation and the current representation. Is there a substantial relationship? And we do that so that the moving party doesn't have to disclose that information. Now, your client has chosen to disclose that information. I actually don't know what cases involve that. What case do we have where they actually disclose the information like your client did and we're not dealing with the presumption?
I couldn't tell you which case that is, Your Honor, but I can talk about what then are the relationships between the cases, if that's where the focus would be.
Well, that's what you just told me that the cases say that you look at the actual confidential information and whether it can be used. And I said, what case is that? Because the case is all really about the presumption based on the substantial relationship and not looking at the actual confidential information. So what?
I think we provided more information. I think we've seen two emails which on their own would indicate that this is a serious problem.
But so the test is, though, it has to be material to the current representation.
And you agree with that? Absolutely, but materiality doesn't mean patent case versus trademark case. Doesn't mean that. It means inclusive of settlement philosophy, litigation philosophy, how the business is run, the structure of the organization, the principal parties who will be deposed and cross-examined by their prior counsel in this case. There are only two people involved in this litigation, the same two people who met and disclosed all these confidences to Twitter's counsel. They're going to be on the stand under cross-examination by their prior attorneys, armed with ammunition, armed with information that, as an attorney myself, I wouldn't be excited or happy to have regarding a former client going against them in a successive case. I think the cases look at that. They do look at the integrity of the system. They look at, and they say, information regarding litigation philosophy, settlement philosophy, approach to that does matter, and it is included in the definition of substantial relationship.
So Ferris says the exact opposite. Ferris says litigation philosophy does not disqualify sharing that information.
Ferris says information is material when it has some critical importance to the present matter.
That's right.
Among other things.
So we have to look at the present matter. You're not looking at the present matter. What you're arguing is any matter. Dury Tangri, because your client shared their litigation philosophy, which is innocuous in any event, when they were being threatened with suit, that disqualifies them from ever being adverse to them. Ever. Always. It actually doesn't matter what the case is. You're saying, right?
That's one of the things we're saying, Your Honor.
But what case says that? Because all the cases say we look, and you even said that, whether it's material to the current representation. So you can't have it both ways.
I think we can argue both, Your Honor. I think we can argue, yes, that this settlement negotiation was more than negotiation. It was financial abilities to front litigation and time abilities to be involved in litigation. It was more than just, oh, here's what we feel about litigation. It was more specific than that. And more damaging.
Sure, they gave them some current financials from 2013 and some estimated through 2016.
That was in addition to the information about what they were thinking about being involved in litigation philosophically and financially. That was different than here are our financial records. They gave them financial data. They gave them information about streaming and downloads, which is extremely material factually to the present case.
How?
How that was conveyed in an email.
How is it extremely material to this case?
This case is about streaming and downloading.
No, it's not. It's about Twitter, and we'll get to this, somehow getting into that business, although I still don't even know how.
It goes to damage analyses on that case, Your Honor. Indeed, it does.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
How?
Well, because if Twitter is wrongfully streaming and people are downloading and they're making money from it, it's wrongful profits. If we've lost business and our downloading and streaming isn't the same or we have to remedy that, then there's another damage.
Right, process. But the damage, according to your client, didn't start to occur until late 2017. So how is anything that they learned in 2013 relevant to that or could be used against your client for a damage analysis beginning in late 2017?
I think the information from 2000 forward gives Twitter an idea of the financial standing of my client to start with. That's the threshold information.
What case says that that would be sufficient to deprive Twitter of their representation of choice?
There isn't any case on point, Your Honor. This is a case-by-case analysis.
What's your best case in support of the disqualification motion?
The
Jessen
case.
The Jessen case? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Right, Mr.
Kingery? Your Honor, it sounds like you have a pretty firm grasp on the issues. If you have questions, I'm happy to address them. I would just say that on Jessen, I believe that Ms. Dean is saying that's her client's best case because Jessen does use the phrases that she has quoted repeatedly, structure and practices of the organization, litigation philosophy, and key decision makers. Subsequent cases from the same court, specifically Ferris and Connie, have clarified that when Jessen said that, it did not mean that that was per se material information. It said that that is generally not material information, that is classic playbook information, which isn't enough. Unless those issues are themselves in play in the second litigation. And the example that comes up in the bad faith context, where your practices for handling claims is the res justi, the stuff itself of the subsequent bad faith litigation. They are not an issue here, and therefore we think it doesn't work under Jessen, and it certainly doesn't work under the cases that clarify that it did not adopt a playbook approach. And that, I think, is the heart of their claim. That was the heart of their claim in their opening brief. Their reply brief says, in so many words, this isn't a playbook case, but then continues to argue that those things are the basis for the disqualification.
I mean, one thing that was interesting is you seem to argue in your reply that because we're a small company, the standard should somehow be different. And I don't know why that's the case. And in fact, if that were the case, then the small companies would never be able to find some lawyers to represent them. Because essentially you're telling these firms, if you represent us once, you are forever, ever barred from being on the opposite side of us. That's essentially what you're arguing here. And I wonder if that's really what your clients want to be arguing.
I think my clients are arguing two things, Your Honor. And I think we've said already in our briefing that that my clients had consulted with counsel about a marital dispute or an employment law contract, something along those lines, and the issues that I think are dovetailed between these two cases were not involved, that might be a different story.
Why? But in an employment litigation context, so you're saying any litigation context?
I think that's the first thing I'm saying, yes.
Okay, but yes. There isn't any case that goes that far.
No, because I think they all look case by case at what was disclosed and what was the one of the standards, which are, as I've described, first the litigation philosophy, and it was more than that. It was financial ability to maintain litigation and keep going on in litigation. That's important. That's big. As well as all the confidential financial information, as well as the streaming information, and additional information, the structure of the business, all of that was disclosed. The two declarations submitted by Warren Granite and Lisa Laporte were really not refuted. That information is major information that they believe strongly, as does my firm, really makes a difference in evening the playing field going forward in this case.
Yeah, but that's not the test. The test is whether it's substantially related, whether it's material to this action. Not whether you feel fondly about it, not whether you would have turned down the representation, right? It's whether it's material and can be used adversely against your client in this case. And that's what I find missing from your submission, is how it would be used in this case. This particular case, your arguments are all general. Your arguments are any case, any case. They can never appear adverse to your client in litigation.
I think we've also made the argument that the cases are related, Your Honor, that there is a twofold position being taken here. There is a relationship, despite patent, despite trademark, there's a relationship between the issues. there is a dovetailing of information.
And what is that?
The screening information, the data that I just described, as well as the damage assessment that I've just described.
So it's the damages?
Yeah, I believe that's where we go.
Okay, all right. Do you have anything on that? On the
Damages, Your Honor, I think you said it already, which is that in their view of the world, their damages began to run in 2017. We had nothing from them about 2017. We had nothing from them about 2016, but projections, 15, 14, and the back half of 13 projections. Those projections, whatever one might have thought about whether they would be material or relevant or even confidential at the time, have been superseded by reality. And so, to the extent any of that would be relevant, what would be relevant would be the reality for those years, and we don't have the reality for those years.
No, one thing you mentioned in your paper was that, well, of course, in the litigation, Twitter is going to get those financials, current financials anyway, the damages discovery.
And the cases address that.
Right, and you said that. So yes. I wondered about that a little bit.
That's not an excuse for the issue. It doesn't obviate the analysis, no. The analysis is still the same. They're not allowed to get it through counsel, and they've got it through counsel.
Well, right, but the relevant is going to be the current, and they're going to get that.
Well, I would think the relevant would be what the past has been and what the present and the future are. Well, I think the comparison between the two.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I'm sort of pivot to the motion to dismiss. What is it that Twitter is doing that your client objects to? What is it?
Streaming video under its own name, under the Twitter brand.
And where do they do that?
On their homepage.
On their homepage?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, and what is it? How does it work?
It calls out if you, for example, go to Amazon and you see, here's our featured TV show that we want you to tune into. That's what Twitter is now doing. It hadn't done prior to 2017. Prior to 2017, Twitter was a platform for third parties to post cat videos. That's not what we're talking about. That is not Twitter under the Twitter brand streaming video. Twitter is now contracting with Bloomberg and making money off putting Bloomberg on its homepage as a featured TV show to plug into.
Okay.
And that's direct competition with what Twitter's been doing.
All right. So now it's not in your complaint, but now I know. So then if it started in 2017, how is your financial condition in 2013 of any relevance?
I would think we'd be showing the depreciation, Your Honor, in our value. I would think we'd be showing the difference between our prior financial data and our current based on loss of business. It would be relevant in that analysis.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, I understand how your client feels, right? And I think to a lay person, I understand why you think if someone represented you, a lawyer, shouldn't ever be able to be on the other side. I get that. So I can appreciate, and I don't fault them for bringing the motion in any sense, but I'm going to deny the motion and I'll write something because I don't think the cases are substantially related.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. So let's move on to the motion to dismiss.
Thank you, Your Honor. Step back.
Yeah, Mr. Lerner, I think, is going to argue this one.
If it's acceptable to Your Honor, I'll cover the contract and tort claims, and Mr. Gratz will handle the trademark claims when we get there.
Well, I think they're all kind of, we have this first, and Ms. Bean sort of answered in a sense, but I think she'll have to amend, is that the complaint itself doesn't allege what it is that they're doing, right? All we have is paragraph, I think it's 19. And that's why I had to ask you, what is it that they're doing? So, but I'll let whoever come up and argue, but I don't think I can say as a matter of, so I therefore would dismiss on that ground, which is that I don't know what Twitter is doing, but you can amend and tell us that we now know it's on their homepage and they're doing something, or they're posting videos or things like that. Okay. But I'll let whoever comes up. But on the contract, here's the issue. We have the oral contract claim is based on the March 2007 interview. Solely. There's no allegation of additional conversations or communications that happened around that time. We have that interview, and I can consider it on the motion to dismiss.
Yes.
What is it in the interview? I'm talking about the exact language, not a paraphrase. what language in that interview was an offer and what was an acceptance and what identifies the consideration?
I think what the interview establishes, Your Honor, is the premise of this lawsuit, the confusion between the marks, and the concern by Twitter that Twitter would infringe on its trademark.
Yes.
We were going to sue you. Yes, I was worried about that.
Yes.
Those are the words that were spoken.
Yes.
Are you going to expand? Well, we're thinking about it, but right now we're sticking with our microblogging work.
Okay.
And the response is, yes, that is good. Text is good. Yes. So one.
Where's the offer? What's the offer?
We're going to be sticking with our microblogging right now.
Okay.
And text is good. Yes, accepted. Text is good. Yes.
That's your offer and that's your acceptance.
I could also argue that the offer was, we didn't sue you, Twitter, for infringing on our trademark, and we're not going to as long as you don't expand.
That may be. That may be. And then that's an agreement. We won't sue you as long as you expand. You expand, we sue you. So that can't be the agreement. That's not your agreement, because then the agreement is we won't sue you as long as you don't expand. And you didn't sue them until they expand, and now you sue them. So that can't be it. But what I'm saying is the language. Don't paraphrase. Point to me the language, because this is a case where we have the exact language. It's right there.
Yes. I agree with Your Honor, and I concede that the oral agreement back in 2007 on the television program is not as strong as the subsequent agreement.
Okay.
I agree with you.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to dismiss it. It's not there. It's not plausible. And you know what makes it even less plausible? Is you go to 2009 when Mr. Laporte writes the letter. Mm-hmm. If there had actually been an agreement in 2007, he would have referenced it in that 2009 letter. There isn't a hint of it being there. That letter, in fact, proves that your oral contract claim is totally implausible.
I take your point, Your Honor.
All right.
I think it's more of a premise and an understanding between the two parties of the confusion that will occur with this ring. And I understand.
It's certainly alleged, and I get it. Twitter, that's sort of.
Pretty close.
I get that. So then let's go to the written contract. Same thing, based solely on the letter and the email response, right? Nothing else. It's the letter and the email response. There weren't other communications or anything else. The
correct.
Written contract.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Again, where's the offer? What is it?
The offer under the case law is a suggestion.
No. I want you to tell me in the letter where the offer is, because we have it. This is where the jury doesn't have to sort of try to resolve the dispute as to what was said or not said. We actually have it. It's right here.
The last paragraph, Your Honor, our relationship started collegially. I'd like to maintain that relationship. Clearly, the use of the Twitter mark for audio or video streaming is problematic for Twit. We don't want to have to use any formal means to protect our mark. Impliably, plausibly, inferentially, don't do it or we're going to have to go to court.
Okay.
Don't do it or we're going to have to go to court. That's the proposal.
Okay.
Do your own thing and we won't go to court.
Well, this is like it's a cease and desist letter. They're sent every day. Every day, right?
They are sent every day. Many
but this is even them. This is even less. This is even less formal than a cease and desist and more, I guess, less forceful than that. We don't want to have to use, okay. Please don't do video streaming. We don't want to sue you. Okay, I get it. That's what he said. I don't know that there's an offer there.
The use for video streaming is problematic. You don't want to have to use formal legal means to protect their mark.
Yeah, he's definitely threatening. If you do this, we will sue.
Any solution here needs to be respectful of our trademark rights. In response, if we say, Twitter says, don't worry, we aren't going to do this.
Okay, stop.
Yes.
Look at the email.
Yes.
We're not expanding under the Twitter brand.
Correct.
And he said that in 2009.
Right.
Okay.
We are not expanding.
And did they in 2009 expand?
No.
In 2010?
No.
In 2011?
No.
In 2012?
No.
2013?
Not until 17.
2014?
No.
Then I don't get it. I don't get it.
What don't you get?
What's here? What
There's
is
an
this?
Agreement that they will not be streaming
that they will never
under the Twitter brand
ever.
That's right.
That's frivolous. That argument is frivolous based on this. There is no way.
There's just no way. That's just completely implausible. That's like any time you send a cease and desist, you say, we're not doing it. You have now agreed and promised forever to never do that. What case even remotely suggests that that's a plausible inference?
The contract cases say, Your Honor, if in fact, here's what I would like to say, Your Honor, point blank. If Twitter didn't want to agree, as it had already agreed, not to stream under the Twitter brand.
Wait, when did it already not agree?
It knew about the confusion way back in 2007. It knew that Leo Laporte was going to sue them because of the infringement. And from 2007 forward, it didn't stream under the Twitter brand.
Yes.
It did not. It refrained from that because it was going to get sued for what you just described.
Oh, that is a gigantic inferential leap. That because they were afraid that your client was going
to
sue
them. Well, we can do discovery to see what the in-house memos say about
it. Why are they doing it now? Why did they suddenly no longer become afraid that your client was going to sue them?
I think the finances tell the story, Your Honor.
Then
it wasn't. They just did a great press release about how many new TV shows are going to be streaming under the Twitter brand. It's big business.
Then it wasn't because of the suit. It was a financial decision.
They knew they were going to get sued, and they are being sued. And the agreement that they made, this CEO of Twitter did not go back to Leo Laporte. When Leo wrote that letter in 2009 and said, stop, do not stream under the Twitter brand or we're going to have to go to court. You're infringing on my trademark if you do that. He didn't go back and say, oh, wait a minute, there's no infringement here. We're planning to expand. He didn't say, give me another couple of years when I won't do this. He said, don't worry. Don't worry. What was he worried about? What was Leo worried about? Leo wasn't worried about them screaming the next day or the day after. He was
Let me ask you about your fraud claim. How is this fraudulent?
It's a representation that Twitter was not going to be screaming under the Twitter.
And what is the allegation that when he made that in 2009, that was fraudulent?
Your Honor, there's no question that the trademarks are still in existence today.
No.
But that's the basis of it.
In 2009, he says, we're not expanding into audio and video. To succeed on your fraud claim, you have to show that in 2009, they knew they were expanding into audio and video. What is the basis for that allegation?
I don't think that's the analysis, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because there is a continuing, to this day, confusion between the marks Twit and Twitter.
So
that exists as we speak today.
Okay.
So that when Twitter moves into Twit's territory, which it had not done before 2017, it had been warned, it understood, it knew what the confusion was, it knew that it was doing microblogging text 140 characters, and Twit had been doing programming TV shows since 2005. That's clear. Everybody understood that. When they began to sort of smell like they were moving into Twit's arena, Twit wrote to them and said, don't do this. You're going to infringe on our trademark. If you do it, we're going to have to sue you. And instead of saying, wait a minute, we have the right to do that. There's no problem between our trademarks. You don't own the exclusive rights to stream video, Twit. Instead of saying that, they said, don't worry, we're not streaming under the Twitter brand.
But that was true.
That's right. And so there hadn't been a lawsuit until they did stream under the Twitter brand.
But how can that be fraudulent if what they responded was correct? And how can it be an agreement? You just said that was true. There's no fraud claim then.
Your Honor, the don't worry, those two words, actually there are six words that are pivotal in this case. Don't worry under the Twitter brand. The don't worry cannot mean anything else but don't worry for the future.
Ms. Beam, that's a frivolous argument.
do you think my client would have thought don't worry means okay, I'm not going to do it today, so we're fine?
We're not doing it today, and since when do they have an obligation to say, we don't think we're infringing? If your client thinks you're infringing, then your client sues. That's all. Why do they have any obligation? All he did is he sent a letter saying, we think you're infringing. And they say, you know what? We're not video streaming. And they're not. And that was true. And somehow that created an agreement or a promise to forever never video stream.
Don't worry, we are not streaming under the Twitter brand. Is that, Your Honor? And
that's not plausible. That is just not a plausible inference. That's just not.
I guess reasonable minds can differ on that one, Your Honor.
Well, I actually don't think so. I'm sorry. I mean, I don't think that's reasonable. That's unreasonable. I'll hear from Mr. Lerner.
Just quickly, again, I think you have obviously a grasp on our arguments, so I don't want to repeat any of them. With respect to the only outstanding issues I see, for both of these agreements with respect to whether or not this can be fixed, you asked the question we had, which is there anything else? And there's not. There's a transcript from 2007. There's a letter in 2009 that doesn't actually make a concrete threat of litigation with respect to streaming under the Twitter brand. It brings up a TV show, and the pieces of the communication, particularly from Mr. Williams, that they leave out and don't discuss with Your Honor, make clear on the face of the document, it doesn't require an inference, that what Mr. Williams was talking about when, to your point, he spoke in the present tense, as happened in the Block case, he spoke in the present tense, he said, we are not doing this, and then he gave a link to a blog post from one of his co-workers about a TV show, the same TV show that Mr. LaPorte had written to him about. They leave out that completely. And then in order to avoid your question about the present tense statement, they do the same thing that they do throughout with regard to both the 2007 agreement and the 2009 agreement, which is they take the only documents they have which could create agreements here. And in order to try to survive in their opposition, they simply rewrite them to avoid the questions Your Honor asked. And for that reason, we don't see a universe in which it's possible to fix these problems. You cannot take these documents, which they went all in on, and said, these are the bases for our claims. They gave them to the court and said, look at these and please find a contract. There's nothing they can do to fix that now, other than what they've done in their opposition, which is rewrite key terms. So for example, they claim in quotes that Mr. Williams said, don't worry, we're not expanding into audio video under the Twitter brand. You can't find that in his document. You can't, it's not to your
You mean
point.
That we're not going, the going was out.
Correct. They put in quotes in their brief, we're not expanding in the future, that they're actually rewriting the documents in order to try to create a promise that's the opposite of what Your Honor identified in the actual document itself. And that's not cricket for a basis for leave to amend. There is not a basis for leave to amend here on the contract claims. And to your point about the breach, you're right that today is the first time anybody ever heard about the alleged breach here. Obviously, I don't think that it was a breach of any agreement because there were no agreements. But to your point about the trademark infringement claim, we agree that you can't come into court and say, I've got this great infringement claim, I'm just not going to tell you how. And now, finally, we're hearing, oh, here's how, we'll tell you exactly, it's on the website. Well, that can be addressed, but not on these briefs. That's not proper.
No, that's leave to amend on the trademark claim. But Ms. Bean, what about that in terms of, and we can disagree and that's okay, but given how I read those documents, why would you get leave? I mean, what more could you allege since they rest solely on the documents? Other than I understand you disagree.
I appreciate that, Your Honor. I think that the case law we cited talks about the contract being interpreted by conduct, and I believe that's what we have here also, a pattern of lack of streaming under the Twitter brand for all these years, as if this, in fact, was an agreement. And I believe that that contract can be interpreted by the conduct and enforced via conduct as well.
But the conduct being just the lack of streaming.
The coexistence relationship, Your Honor, which has happened here since 2007, since the TV show. Twitter respected the arena owned by Twit and take a look, just we're sort of leaking into the trademark issue, but look at the Twitter trademark. The registration doesn't allow Twitter to stream under its own brand.
Well, so that's the, and I think your colleague was going to argue.
That's
but, but I just, but putting aside the trademark, what it seems like is a trademark case, not a contract or fraud case. So is that, but if I were to give you leave to amend, is that it? That's what you would allege, is that that the fact that they didn't stream for 8 years?
I think you could interpret that written document interchange plausibly via the lens or through the lens of conduct as well. I do believe that the words give rise to an agreement and the conduct enforces it, and a contract can be interpreted via conduct.
Okay.
And that, Your Honor, is just wrong. There's one thread that Your Honor has written about in the past, and all the courts, including all of their authorities, in their briefs, the jury instructions, they identify 302, 307, and all of them identify the stream of cases starting with the Lattice case, which Your Honor's quoted before. And the one thread that runs throughout all of this is they have to show you something that is definite enough that Your Honor can determine the scope of the duty, the limits of performance, which must be sufficiently defined to provide for a rational basis of the assessment of damages. Even if, for some reason, they could go back and look at the conduct again, which they've already done, they're not suggesting they have any new conduct they could show, Your Honor. They already put all that in their brief. There's nothing new. That conduct, as you just pointed out, is consistent with exactly what Mr. Williams said. We are not doing it. And they didn't do it for years and years. And the other thing is that, which is where kind of things truly get crazy, is when they initially pled this 2007 agreement, they said, well, this radio show shows that they had a coexistence agreement where Twit agreed not to go into Twitter space and Twitter agreed not to go into Twit space. They realized when we pointed it out that no one could ever read that exchange to find that agreement. It's just nowhere in there. If that were the agreement, it started being breached long, long ago, as we pointed out in our papers, because video was being streamed on Twitter as early as 2013.
Well, that's fine.
Correct. But
that's not under the Twitter brand.
Well, so we'll get to that, and I'll let Mr. Gratz address those. But the
I didn't actually know Vine was owned by Twitter.
Understood.
Nor did anybody else.
So, but the point being that if the only agreement was don't go into each other's space, and Mr. Laporte is busy watching video be streamed from Twitter, then that agreement just makes no sense as a basis for this conduct argument. The conduct argument doesn't work.
No, I understand.
Okay.
The question is, in the interview, is there an agreement there? I don't see it.
Okay. There is in the interview an understanding by two companies that their names are confusing in the marketplace. If they stray into each other's territory, they would have a problem. And that was, I was going to sue you. I was worried about that. Was an admission by Twitter that if there was confusion, but as long as they were in their own little arenas, it wouldn't matter. It didn't affect Twitter.
Sure, there wouldn't be litigation.
Right. Exactly.
It's not a promise not to go into it. It's just an understanding, as you said, that there is a potential for confusion, and that if you do move into each other's space, it may result in litigation. That I get from it. Sure, I agree with that. But to take the additional leap that therefore we have promised not to go into it, no way. That's not it. That's turning just in every conversation you have with anyone, anytime about a potential infringement into an agreement not to go into that.
I think, Your Honor, we've cited two cases that describe the fact that agreements can be shown by acts and conducts of the party interpreted in the light of the subject matter and the surrounding circumstances. Kashmiri, Foley, etc. That's what we're looking at here.
No, I understand that. I just don't think the fact that they didn't go into it for another 8 years supports, makes it plausible that there was actually an agreement there. I understand that. I'll accept that. They didn't go into it. That's what you allege, so I have to accept that as true. But I don't think that gets you over there. But the statute of limitations argument, that's really a summary judgment argument. The things that you asked to take
judicial notice of, not appropriate on the 12B6, the Vine video. It's not just whether they dispute it or not. Otherwise, what's the difference between summary judgment and 12B6? Most things on summary judgment are authentic. In any event, I think you recognize this to some extent because in your reply you moved it to the back.
Understood. Anyway, thank you.
So let's talk about the trademark, though, and why I shouldn't give leave to amend on the trademark claim. Now they can amend, and they can tell us exactly where it is, and they can allege more robustly why there's a likelihood of confusion.
That's right, Your Honor. That, I mean, what we've learned today is something that could go in the pleadings and solve one of the problems, which is we don't that it doesn't plead what the infringement was or what the scope of it was. In our view, Your Honor, it doesn't solve the presumption of latches problem, which arises from the launch of Vine in 2013 and the materials that Your Honor has just said aren't appropriate for consideration on this motion. Not considering those materials, Your Honor, there isn't anything in the there isn't anything pleaded in the complaint right now that tells us what was happening in between the alleged agreements and the alleged infringement. And so the record on that doesn't provide enough information right now, excluding the materials of which we sought judicial notice.
Well, even if you include them, I don't know how publishing something under Vine creates a likelihood of confusion. I mean, I don't quite understand. It's certainly not a 12B issue. I don't know if it's a summary judgment issue or not, but I certainly couldn't throw the claim out as a matter of law.
Understood, Your Honor. Our view on it is that the notice that's shown in the plaintiff's netcast and the plaintiff making statements in that netcast about this being a service from Twitter and showing it streaming video on the Twitter website as of January of 2013 shows that not only had, to the extent there's a claim about video, that it had arisen, but there was notice of that claim as of that time because we have video of him getting notice.
But there might not be any infringement. In other words, Vine and Twit, there's no likelihood of confusion.
We don't contend, Your Honor, that there's likelihood of confusion between the name Vine and the name Twit, but what the materials in the record show is that Vine was not Vine was on the Twitter website and was in some sense under the Twitter brand, at least for some purposes.
Maybe, but that's a summary judgment when the evidence have been developed argument.
Certainly we would concede, Your Honor, that without considering the materials of which we sought judicial notice.
Even considering what you sought judicial notice, it's not, I couldn't say as a matter of law that they'll never be able to defeat that argument.
I understand your position, Your Honor.
So then you had the other argument, and we have to look at what the incontestability of the mark was registered for. And again, I don't think I can say it, that I couldn't give them leave to amend there, because I think we have to just flesh it out.
In that circumstance, Your Honor, the conduct that they are accusing as infringement, as compared to the text of the registration, is a question. And to the extent there's leave to amend as to what the alleged infringement is, one would have to do that analysis based on what the alleged infringement is, which we don't currently have in the record. Based on what's in the record, our view is the alleged activity would fall within all along, right, Your Honor?
All right. But
to the extent that's going to change, that analysis necessarily changes.
Well, I think I would dismiss it just because they haven't alleged what it is, so therefore haven't plausibly alleged a likelihood of confusion, not based on the incontestability of the mark, and then they'll amend and they'll set forth what they've seen, what's on the video. We usually have in a trademark case is you have screenshots and the like so that we can compare and we can see.
Absolutely.
To meet your pleading burden there. So I think the trademark claim survives. I don't think you've stated the other claims, not least of which is because you hadn't alleged what it was in fact they're doing. You could amend to do that, but for the reasons I said, and I'll take under submission as to whether to grant leave to amend there, but I would on the trademark claim. So.
And when you say the trademark claim survives, Your Honor, Your Honor means dismissal with leave to amend?
Correct.
Thank you.
Yes.
And that would then include the final three claims, Your Honor? The trademark, the unfair competition, and the violation of common law trademarks?
I believe so. Isn't that right?
I think the same arguments apply to the same pleading deficiency as to what the alleged infringement or wrongful act is applies to all three.
Okay.
I'd also ask, Your Honor, about the interference with prospective economic relations claims, because they're not essentially based on the contract issue. They go to the interference, the wrongful act that underlies the interference claims. We have to have one. It would be the trademark infringement that we've also pled.
The wrongful act in 2017. Well, what about that? I guess that would be Mr. Lerner.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I mean, again, I'm just talking about leave to amend.
Right. Again, they would need to put that in, but that would not come close to satisfying all the elements of that claim. They still would not have any identified relationship that was interfered with. And as Judge Koh made quite clear in the cases that we cited, you can't just say, as they've said, there's some relationship out there. Please let us keep going.
Yeah, what is the relationship that was interfered with? I mean,
we have pled that existing client relationships have been
interfered. Which clients and how?
There has been confusion expressed by our clients, our customers, regarding Twitter and Twit now streaming video.
But if they're still your clients, then there's no interference. That's, I understand that may be evidence to support your trademark claims, but what is the basis that they've actually interfered and harmed your business? Have you lost clients? And so which clients?
We
you have to identify how.
Yes, we can plead that.
You can plead that.
Yes.
All right. I think it's a little different from the contract claims where we have the universe is very cabined there, and the fraud claim.
Understood. I think if they have a Rule 11 basis, obviously, to claim that somebody, that they were not just, that was watching Twit, which is, I think, what I just heard, because that's not an economic relationship. Watching Twit is not, I think, something that's going to get them over the hump. They need to plead somebody that, a relationship with somebody that they either were or had a probability of making money from. And as Judge Koh, as I said, pointed out in the Damabe case and elsewhere, my only concern, and obviously we'll see, is that there's no reason to believe there's going to be a relationship that actually relates to an economic benefit here.
All right.
I understand the issue, Your Honor. We've pled that. There has been an interference with existing clients, and we will amend to show the court.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So how much timing on the amendment, Your Honor?
No, I'll issue written. I'll issue written order
all right,
on the disqualification
okay.
on this as well. And
right.
I'll probably give you, I mean, how much time do you want after I issue the order?
I would say 2 weeks would be fine.
Oh, yeah. I'll give you 20 days at least.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Everyone have a good holiday weekend.
Yes, you
too. Thank you, Your Honor.